Welcome to this mini-series of podcasts for World Athletics, where myself, Liliana Vora, the Women in Sport Manager at Athletics Ireland, and Vicky Hyten, the founder of the Female Coaching Network, will be interviewing a number of coaches who had a role at this year's World Athletics Championships. Whether it be as a team coach or a personal coach, we want to find out about their experiences of the World Championships in Eugene, what their roles involved, and how they managed through the busiest summer of athletics to date.
And for this podcast, we are super, super excited to welcome Lucina Golding-Clark, who is a former 100-meter hurdler representing Jamaica at 3 Olympic Games, 5 World Championships, and a number of Commonwealth Games, winning gold in Manchester in 2002. Lucina retired in 2010 after reaching her 6th consecutive 60-meter final at the World Indoor Championships. Following her retirement, Lucina moved into coaching and spent a number of years volunteering as an assistant coach at Auburn from 1999 to 2006. She then spent 10 years as an assistant coach at the University of Texas El Paso, where she directed the minors sprints and hurdle events. In recent weeks, Lucina has taken up a new role as assistant coach for the Women's Sprints and Hurdles program back at Auburn University, which is one of the biggest universities in the south of the USA. And we are going to ask Lucina all about her World Championship experience, which we have to say was a phenomenal spectator sport of watching the 100-meter hurdle. So Lucina, I'm going to go straight in and ask you, the moment when Toby crossed that finish line at the World Champs in the most phenomenal time, world record time of 12:12, where were you? What was going through your mind? And what was the first thing you did when you saw her?
Well, ladies, thank you so much for having me on this morning. It was surreal. The moment was so surreal. I was standing right next to Joanna Hayes, who was the 2004 Olympic champion. And we stood there as the race went by. I looked at my clock and I'm like, is this the world record or not? Like, and then I looked down on the clock and I just saw her screaming. I didn't even see the time down there. And then I hear everyone's like, it's the world record. And I'm like, the world record? It said so on my clock, but is it real? So it was just a tremendous feeling that come over me and just happy, just so happy. I just started screaming for no reason. I'm sure people are looking at me like, what is happening to this lady? But it was, the moment was so surreal, and it's still, it hasn't really dawned on me yet. I'm just hearing everyone saying congratulations, but it's really something to take in. So I'm just proud of that moment.
And it's super hard to predict if your athlete's going to get a world record, obviously, but did you have any idea that she was edging towards that kind of time?
You know, in 2019, before we traveled to Doha, I sort of have an inclination that she may come close, like running in the 12 twos, not breaking the world record, but she was able to do it. It did not happen. In 2020, during the pandemic, we've trained so hard and rehearse. And I had a feeling then that she could, but I did not expect the world record to be broken by so far of a time, you know? I was thinking, well, the world record is 12:20, she may go 12:19 or 12:18, something like that. But to go 0.08, it's unheard of, first of all, but I am just happy that I was a part of it. So,
and a big part of it as well.
A big part of it.
For those that haven't necessarily followed Toby's journey, and they're used to seeing an American or a Jamaican, you know, winning the gold or setting the world records. Obviously, you've taken Toby incrementally from, I think I'm right in saying, from 14.2, obviously, all the way down to the world record. So what kind of main areas have you been working on with her? Because I remember seeing a slow motion video in the middle section of that world record. I have never seen strength and power displayed in such a perfect way through that technique. So I'm guessing technique's obviously been a big part of that, especially for the hurdles. But
yes,
what main areas you've been focusing on with it?
Well, at first in 2016, we started technical work. And because when she came to school as a first year college student, she was very weak. Overall body strength week. So I started kind of building a general strength of the body. And the following year, we move into just more of a tightening up that technique that we're working on. So from 2016 until this year, we've always worked on technique. We've worked on strength as we move along, not necessarily the supplemental weight room, but just her body, just getting her body totally strong. And then we move into her having a psychologist, her mind, and so she can focus on exactly what it is that she ought to do when she competes. And usually she gets some kind of way, you know, not focus, because there are athletes who are of the same caliber in the event. And so she would not be as calm and focused as she should be. So we work on that a lot, I guess, mental focus, mental strength, overall general body strength and technique and speed. This year more so, we've worked on speed 2022 because she's gotten far faster. She can hold that rhythm in the hurdle longer. And my goal for her was not to falter at the eighth, seventh or eighth hurdle like I used to do. So I tried to get her to be stronger, faster, and can hold that rhythm longer through the finish line or past the finish line. So that's what we worked on for the past couple of years.
And if anybody listening has not seen a slow motion video of Toby in that world record, please go and find it. It's on social media. It is beyond, it's textbook. It's absolutely amazing to watch. So moving on from Toby to more about you. So you were obviously an incredibly successful athlete yourself, and way back in 2002, winning gold at the Commonwealth Games in Manchester. A few weeks after Toby obviously won the world champ, she then also won the Commonwealth Games down the road from Manchester in Birmingham. What was it like for you, having won the same event in 2002 to 20 years later in the same country, to then watch an athlete that you've been working with win gold as well?
You know, that is something special. And you know, that was the second time she's won the Commonwealth Games. And going into the Commonwealth Games this year, I was a little nervous about it because I don't know how her body would have held up from the World Championships and going into the Commonwealth Games this year. But I guess by the grace of God, I should say, she's gone in with confidence. It was all confidence after the World Championship in Eugene that took her through the rest of the season, because she's like, if I did it before, I can do it again. So, but it was amazing. And I am really, truly, honestly proud of how she competed this year and how I have played a role in her being as confident as she should be and dedicated. And she sacrificed a whole lot for training this year, and her season has speaks for itself.
Amazing. And as well as obviously the athlete sacrificing and traveling and committing to the event and progressing in the sport, you as a coach obviously have to do that. And I'm really interested to ask you how this crazy summer of athletics, how you've managed it as well, because we focus so much on athletes peaking, recovering and performing. We never really mention how the coaches manage. And you working at one university, changing to another university, having a world record holder, athlete, world champs, Commonwealth Games, Diamond Leagues, like, how do you manage yourself in all of that? And do you think there needs to be more focus from governing bodies and federations on coach well-being as well?
I think so. I mean, the mental health of coaches needs to be taken into consideration. This year more so, I did not travel as much this year because I'm changing jobs and I have a college team that I have to take care of, and then I have to take care of the professional athletes that I coach, and the most successful one is Toby, but I still have others. But it tends to get really tiring at some time, some point in the season, and being very drained at time, but I still have to be mentally tough. And I feel like because I was an athlete in the past, it sort of carries over. And I still have those fundamental values of I have hard work. I know what hard work is like. I have to be dedicated to my craft as well, just to get them to be as best as they can be as a person, you know, in the sport. So, but I think I have, I think I went through it well this year because I had no idea what the year was going to be like for Toby. I knew she would be in the medal contention, you know, but hoping for a world record every single year, but this year it just all happened at once. Just Diamond League champion, world record holder, like Commonwealth champion, Commonwealth record holder. It was a full season for her and myself. But I feel like I just need to be mentally focused and continue to work hard. Those are my values. And I feel like it's just year after year after year, each coach or any coach whatsoever, if they have two roles in the sport as coaching, it's going to be hard. You just have to learn to handle it.
And you've got another world championships coming soon as well.
Yes, back to back.
Yeah, a quick question on the governing body support. This was something that we interviewed Hayley Harrison, who's a 400 meter hurdle coach, a couple of weeks ago. And she mentioned that there could be a possibility at a major championships for the governing bodies to provide a space for coaches to go to relax, to, you know, even have an afternoon nap if they need to. Like, what do you think about that idea where the governing bodies or the organizing committee of the event caters for coaches in that way?
I think that would be tremendous. I think it would be a nice thing to do because I feel like the governing body at any sporting event, they tend to take care of the athletes, the agents or managers, but the coaches really doesn't play a part in it whatsoever. And I think if they could kind of look at it, rework some of the areas and include coaches, it would be nice for us coaches to have a space, you know, in those kind of arena as well.
I am going to pass you over to our hurdler, Lilianne, who I know wants to pick your brain, Lucina, about hurdling technique. So I'll hand you over to Lilianne.
Lucina, like I said, it's an absolute honor to be able to chat to you and obviously discuss your own experiences, obviously as an athlete, but as a coach. But the one thing already that has instantly stood out to me since you came on to this interview is you're an incredibly grounded, poised, kind, smiley individual. And it is something that myself and Vicky, as interviewers on this podcast, are feeling. So I can't imagine the support and the guidance and the impact that you have on your athletes. And obviously, as we've discussed, it is a very exhausting experience. You are the pivotal player. You are the brains behind this world record that has been ratified only just the other day. I suppose the question before I get into the hurling questions that I will ask is, I suppose, what gives you the most joy in your coaching? And does it replicate the buzz that you had as an athlete?
The most joy for me is that family-oriented type of relationship that my athletes and I have. Most of my athletes, especially in the university scene, they are international student athletes, and their parents send them far away to school here in the US. And I have to make a family out of them. They have to feel at home in order to be the best that they want to be. So I feel like my best aspect, I guess, is how I care for them and how they feel the caring that I've shown, so they can eventually become somebody, someone that they want to be.
It's definitely very evident, like I said, from the minute you came on and logged on, I felt that warmth from yourself. So I can't imagine the feelings that you are providing to your athletes and your university students as well. But one of the questions that I will ask, because obviously you did a huge amount of duty of care to someone like Toby over the years, as Vicky mentioned, you brought her from a 14 to girl to a 12.1, like two girl. It's just like that, watching.
You know, she had, the time wasn't there when I recruited her. She's run a windy 13 seconds 10, but I mean, automatic, it's a 14 some, but she had it. She just had it in her. The coaches that she had before, I guess, you know, molded her, but couldn't get that out of her. And because I have an eye for hurdling, and because I've done it so well before, I could get that out of her. Yeah. So she had it in her before.
Yeah.
So it wasn't difficult for that transition into the 12s.
Just a lot of care.
Yes.
And Lucina, on that, because I know that obviously world-class hurdling is defined by 1.1 splits between the hurdles. Was once upon a time before Toby came
once upon a time, yes.
And she absolutely destroyed that mark. When she won the world record, but how fast do you think those splits can go? Because I think Toby's slowest one was either 0.94 or 0.97. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Yes. I think I saw one as fast as 0.91. When are we going to see 0.8?
You know, I feel like there are a couple ladies out there who can absolutely run 0.89, 0.88. I feel like there are a couple who could do it. It's a matter of fact of if they can hold it for long enough. I feel like you will eventually start seeing ladies stepping up into the hurdle realm and running in the 0.89s. I mean, when I was competing, we were 1.0, 1.1, maybe a couple 0.98, but now, I mean, time has changed. I for one would not think when I was competing that the world record would eventually be 12.12. But I absolutely feel as though there are a couple in the future who are competing now who you you'll see that they can absolutely touch 0.89s and stuff like that.
Yeah. There's just a bunch of women there at the moment that are absolutely, they're such a pleasure to watch.
Yeah.
But obviously, as lovely as they are to watch, they're going so incredibly fast that there's very little room for error. And they're obviously chasing kind of small margins to improve and so on like yeah. that. And you discussed, you just mentioned there about like who can hold it the longest, i.e. maybe also who can get into less trouble.
And you know, sometimes I used to believe that the faster you are is the better hurdler you can be. But I realize it's not so.
Yeah.
You don't have to be overly fast to be one of the greatest hurdlers. It comes with the rhythm that you have and the technique, how sound your technique is. Because hurdling is much like running the 100 meters. You're just going over barrier. And if your technique can be as sound or as tight or close to your body as you move along, then you will absolutely run fast.
Because that was actually going to lead me on to my next question, is that, Lasina, is that like, you know, you're constantly trying to juggle speed, your speed endurance, your technique, your rhythm. For athletes, where do you think is the biggest area for growth, for improvement? Or does it depend on the athlete?
It depends on the athletes. It's everyone is not the same. And you, if you have an eye for an athlete, then you will know exactly where to move from there. But for me, I think it's the rhythm and speed endurance, because you have to be able to hold that certain pattern for the entire 10 barriers in order to have a good time or run a better time than you've run before. So for me, I feel like it's more rhythm than speed.
Yes.
And the core strength that you've acquired in, you know, the body.
Well, you're going to give a lot of hurdlers out there who might not be as fast on the flat a lot of hope after that answer.
Yes.
Yeah. but on that note, so with all you have to juggle as an international coach, what does a typical training week look like if you're trying to balance them being agile enough, bouncy enough, fit enough, strong enough? You know, what does a typical training week look like? How much emphasis is placed on technique? How much is on pure speed? And how much is on hurdling?
You know, it's, I believe, and it's only my opinion, that I do more of a rhythm work over so than speed. I also do, endurance, speed endurance work, but out of the entire week I'll probably hurdle 3 times for the out of the 5 or 6 days, and then recovery day is important in that as well, or off day. Strength training is also a part of it. I'll do 4 days of strength training, not necessarily all the Olympic lifts, but some kind of modalities when it comes to maybe dumbbell training, stuff like that. But I will train more rhythm than I'll do speed. And a lot of persons won't agree with that. But it all depends on the athlete.
Of course.
The strength of the athlete.
And Lasina, the difference, right? Because it's such marginal gains you're looking for in the hurdles. But how, for the naked eye or for you as a coach, how did it go from a 12.2 to a 12.12? Where did you see the growth or the change of those kind of improvements?
You know, even though an athlete may train the same all day or all week or year, I believe it's the mental part of the game. It's not necessarily Toby has done something different or more of something. It's now the confidence that she acquired in getting into a competition. It is more how much you want it, how much you want this win, or how much you want to go out and do your very best. It's the execution of how you should do it and how calm and relaxed and focused you are to get it done. Mm-hmm. I think that's just what it is.
Because I suppose one of the things you mentioned as well, Athena, was that there's a lot of fast girls running at the moment. Kendra Harris and Jasmine Comanche-Quinn, yes. And Toby,
amazing,
for example.
Amazing young and ladies.
It's lovely to see the head-to-heads and that competitive rivalry that, you know, as you said, I think we're going to see some faster times again and again.
Yes.
Amongst all the girls. And best of luck to them all. It's going to make great viewing for us as spectators and as fans. Yes. But they're all, you know, they're all different athletes in their makeups, their mechanics. But like that one thing that really just stand out to me is Toby is an incredible technician, like textbook, better than textbook, you know. is that an element you enjoy coaching?
It is an element. From day one, we start technical work. I don't wait until the middle of the season or 5 weeks out. I start technical work from the first day of practice, because we have to get back into it. The body, muscle memory. So the body has to remember what it does. You know, after resting for a period of time, I have to get back into the technical aspect of it. Technique and rhythm is my favorite thing to coach.
Okay. And my final question, because I could sit here and ask you questions all day, Lucina, but I promise I won't. You have a job to go to. But as the summer season has finally came to a close, and you can sign off as the coach to a world champion, a Diamond League final winner, and a Commonwealth Games champion for the second time, will you and your team ever consider running the indoors?
You know, we've always run indoors. This year was the year that we sit out, and I feel like it helped her this year more so, because in the past, I feel like I've got it wrong when it's time for her to be at the peak of her season. It comes at the end and not at a major championship. And I feel like indoors, sitting out indoors has gotten her, Toby, the world record. We are going to consider doing some indoors this year, but maybe not all the competition that we've used to. So I am still going to consider indoors a little bit, just to see, just to play, because it's all trial and error. So I'm still learning as I go, you know. So I am not as seasoned as a coach would say, you know, maybe they know exactly how to taper from indoor all the way through outdoor. But for me, I'm still learning that part of it, even though I was an athlete and I've done it. But as time go by, each athlete, it's totally different. Their makeup is totally different. The way they rest is different. The way they do things are different. So I feel like I should kind of dabble into a little bit so I can learn what it does or what it didn't do, or, you know, how we can make it work throughout so she could stay on top for the rest of her career.
And sorry, my last question, because you just mentioned there, I can't not ask it. But you learn from your athletes, you learn from your past experience. Who are you still learning from? Are there coaches that you, or researchers that you kind of lean on to, or who's your support network and such?
You know, I have a couple. And Coach Bev Kearney, she was one of the best women coaches that I learned from and still learning from. She used to be the head coach of the University of Texas back then, but she had a couple Olympian gold medalists and world champion gold medalists. She was Coach Francis from Jamaica. And those are people that I can always call if I feel stuck and say, you know, I'm stuck on these things. What do you think? You know, could you help me pass through this? You know, so those are people that I've always can go to. So
that support's important for you as well. Like obviously you're supporting your athlete.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I know for a fact that people need mentors. And even though I have a world record holder who is an athlete, I still need to be mentored. So I still call and check in once in a while, and for them to say, you know, you're doing well, continue to do this, continue to do that. So, yes.
And that's why you're a world-class coach.
Yes, I'm continuing to learn, still learning. I'll pick up a book or two and just read and make sure that I'm not stale or stagnant. I'm continuing to move along.
I do love earlier when you said that people may not agree with you about making rhythm such a priority. I'm not sure they have a choice to agree with you on. So amazing. I'm going to finish off the scene with four super quick questions. Hopefully they're not too hard, but only one or two word answers. So just to get to know you a little bit more to finish the podcast. So the first question is, which is more nerve-wracking, being a coach or being an athlete?
Being a coach.
Okay.
A coach is really nerve-wracking. It sometimes make me feel like I'm going to have a heart attack because I don't know what's going to happen. I'm so nervous for the race.
If I was to ask you what your favorite book is, what's the first book that comes to mind?
My favorite book is Chop Wood, Carry Water.
Number three, the best coaching advice you have ever been given.
The best coaching advice I've ever been given is to continue to learn. Continue to learn as you go. And if you speak it, you claim it, you go and do it.
Love that. And the very last question, which is your most favorite championships you've been involved in, either as an athlete or a coach?
My favorite championship. I want to say my favorite championship was 2004 Olympic Games. I really enjoyed that competition. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I enjoyed everything about that championship, even though I was only fifth in the hurdles.
Only fifth.
Only fifth, yeah. Lizina, thank you so much. Best of luck with your continued success. We're really, we've been big fans over in the UK and in Ireland and all over the world. But thank you so much for giving us that opportunity to connect with you and to inspire the next generation of coaches coming through.
Thank you so much.